Okay, welcome to section three. It's meant to be a very casual Q&A, and really I can get you started with some of the hands-on processes of what you'll be typing and what you need to do to get yourself started. But before that, just any questions about... Oh, when you try to download Stylus, it's not accepting your password? Oh, so you can download it?
I was able to download, but I can't start it up.
Oh, so did you download also this key code from the website, if you see here? So there's a second link that you have to download as well, which looks like this, and it tells you what code you need to use. Okay, so grab that too from the website, and this is what they sent over to me as our sort of semester-long trial, and XML Spy has something similar. And let me redress one.
Is the price of Stylus a little more reasonable than XML Spy?
I think it's more straightforward, frankly. I find...
Oh, price-wise, XML Spy is really expensive.
I think they're both pretty pricey, frankly.
Price.
Yeah. I think if there's something for the Mac, I think it would be the same thing that I will look into for Linux and so forth, because it would be Java-based. So I will check on that and post a link if I find something that looks good. And let me just chmod these files online so that we... Okay, that's my fault. We didn't have them set.
Yeah, for some reason we can't download the zip files.
Yep, now you can. It was just the permissions were off, so they're downloadable now. Okay, other questions on Project 1, on tonight, on previous stuff?
I had a general question. We're talking about like MSXML or XRC, the Xion, all these different...
Mm-hmm.
We're always talking about like the browser wars and incompatibility. So if you're developing an application, you know, if you're going to use Xerxes, is there a chance, is that at the client side? So then you have to put something on every client?
So it depends. So the question is... In light of all these past browser wars and so forth, which process should we use and what can you trust would be on the client's machine? I would say that typically XSLT to this day is still not being used on the client end. It's much safer to use transformatively on the server end so that you have full control over the software being used. The original vision, or one original vision of XML and XSLT, was that you could do a lot more client-side part processing. And this is a good thing when you have increasing processor speeds and bandwidth can push more data to the client, and you can start to free up server cycles. However, you do have that kind of issue where then you need client-side software, then you might be pushing more data to the client than you actually want them to see in a format you don't want them to have. So you don't really see XSLT being used as much on the client, at least not in like a browser context. Maybe in downloadable software that might have the parser or processor embedded in it, but I wouldn't say that browsers are really being used to do this.
So is it fair to say that in developing applications you would do all of your pre-processing server side and then like the CSS would be all client side?
Yeah, I think that's still the tendency. Do a lot of the transformation logic server side and leave it to the browser to take things the final step with CSS and so forth. So it's not an ideal world, but at least when it comes to these implementations of JAXP in particular. Oh, right, which in general is just superior, I think, you know, performance issues and scalability aside. But I think you'll find that among the parsers and processors, Xerxes and Xeon are reference implementations, so they should adhere to the spec 100%. Michael Kay's Saxon not only does that for XML and XSLT 1 and 1, but also for XPath 2 and XSLT 2, which haven't been finalized, but he keeps the software up to date with the current status of the recommendation. So he has implementations of the candidate recommendations of those languages, which could change completely, but he keeps up with it. So. Are there general questions, concerns, confusions?
Just on the model.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to develop an application, a web-based application, and you use XSLT to create what you wanted to see,
mm-hmm.
and then that would be downloaded from the server to a client,
mm-hmm.
and would the client then be able to say, well, interact with it to make it interactive such that then it goes back to the server reformatted in a different way?
So is there much interactivity with the content generated by XSLT server-side? I would say no. I would consider, at least so far as we're going to be looking at it for the next few weeks, the use of XSLT in a server-side context to transform content into a format that you then, static content, then you then want to ship over to the client. What you're describing, the sort of interactivity between client and server, is more along the lines of something like AJAX, which we've mentioned before, which isn't necessarily XSLT, but has this behind-the-scenes interaction between server and client, which is XML-based, but much more of it is actually JavaScript-driven, which is unfortunate, but reality. So the short answer is no. This is not as powerful a mechanism as what you proposed.
You're thinking more of like a dashboard. So let's look at the ability
to Sure. Well, what might be useful, and stop me if not, is for me to do a quick just walkthrough of what Project 2 is giving you, and maybe not dwell so much on some of the details since you haven't so much as read the spec yet, but just to give you a sense of what you're in for. So when you log into NICE, you're going to do the same sort of command as before, which is going to copy CS259, public HTML, distribution, projects, project 2, 6.0, oops. Okay. So that step is identical pretty much to project 1, and all of this is walk through in the spec. So we now have a Project 2 directory. So here's its layout. You have three main directories for the three parts of the project that I mentioned earlier, B2B, MyBlockbuster, and Xtube. Build.xml, even though we're not using Java in this assignment, is written in a way to facilitate the application of Xalin, or more generally XSLT, to the XML content, just so that you're not typing a lot of arcane command line commands in order to generate the XML, the XSLT, and so forth. So this is all pretty well documented in here, but what you'll find, for instance, is that part of the project, as I alluded to earlier, is to do more and do better than I was doing tonight, writing myblockbuster.xsl and applying it to myblockbuster.xml. Normally, to do this with Xalin, you would do the following. And I say using Xalin because we're not, again, using JaxP for this assignment. We are specifically using Xalin as an XSLT processor. So if we go into, for instance, myblockbuster.xml, a bunch of directories, in these two are the files we saw tonight. So in the XML directory is myblockbuster.xml, same file. In XSL is myblockbuster.xsl. Same file that we saw tonight with a little bit more. We tried to make things prettier, so we've got like some graphics going on in there. So what you'll find is that, and there's also this XHTML directory, which has nothing in it. Because as you'll see from the project spec, the goal in this part of the project is to enhance this style sheet so that it does something interesting, subject to some specifications, and dumps the results of applying XSL to XML in this XHTML directory. So in other words, put a web page in that directory. So the typical way to do this would be as follows with Xalin. Xalin's usage is as follows. Is to type Xalin and then specify the input document with the dash capital in flag. And that document's going to be this, myblockbuster.xml. So I've typed Xalin, a nice dash in XML slash myblockbuster.xml. Then you specify the style sheet with dash XSL in all caps. Then you specify the actual file, which is XSL slash myblockbuster.xsl. Again, these commands are documented in the spec. And then you can just hit enter. And what that will do is apply the style sheet to the XML file. And as we got tonight, you get XHTML output. So what we're looking at here on the screen, for those of you following along at home, is the HTML or XHTML output of the application of the XSL to the XML. Notice it's incredibly uninteresting. All this thing has is a logo, and you'll see when you pull it up in the browser that that logo, myblockbuster.gif, is included in the distribution. But there's no content. In fact, we're not even making use of the XML file. But I said earlier that you're pretty well equipped, even though we worked pretty quickly tonight over some of the details. You have the framework in this XSL file, myblockbuster.xsl, of a template. So if you match on the root, pretty much for this project's purposes, you can play entirely in this area and just create not only the XSL elements that you want, like a for each, but also an XSL value elements, and then a lot of HTML markup. Because the goal of this project, for this part of the project, is to create, as I note on page 10, a web page that looks like this. For those of you following along at home, page 10 of the project spec, it's just a web page that has a bunch of hyper-references that use what are called fragment IDs in HTML, which are those sharp symbol type links that allow you to link within different parts of the same page. So it's one page with lots of links to other parts of the page. So it is not a hard implementation by any means. It's really just meant to acclimate you to XSLT and the relatively few XPath expressions that would be required to get it done. If we scroll back in time to the B2B aspect, the B2B aspect is even simpler. And I say simple not because it's going to be obvious to you at minute one how to implement it, but because you'll find in the end that we're maybe talking about 8 lines of code, ultimately, but the point of the exercise is to familiarize you with some of the XPath documentation. Again, the W3C's reference online is among the best. So if we scroll down here to the XPath section, you will see the W3 School's XPath tutorial. And as I've said in the syllabus, the best types of readings to do, if you like to supplement lectures with readings, are read up on tutorials like this that are germane to the lecture at hand. You'll see that there's an intro that walks you through this tutorial. There's a link to nodes on this page, syntax, axes, example, summary, XPath functions. This will be useful in particular when doing this B2B component, because what b2b.xsl asks you to do is the following. I give you the framework of an XSL document, which does compile, but notice that there's a comment where the juicy stuff should be. It doesn't do anything. It just has a comment here, so if we run this on input, it's not going to do anything. As the project spec explains, what this template expects is a parameter, because though we didn't spend time on it tonight, the spec does in sufficient detail, mentions that you want to pass this style sheet, not an XML file, but for simplicity, because this is the first exercise we're doing, pass it a parameter, because style sheets, like templates, can take parameters. And it's as simple as this. If, as the child of the style sheet element, you simply say XSL param and give it a name, what you're telling the XSL processor is that this style sheet takes a parameter. The means by which you reference parameters is actually with that dollar sign syntax that you showed you earlier. So in fact, if I want to, for demonstration's sake, change this to-do statement to be XSL value of select dollar sign date time, what this is going to print in our web page is the value of the variable called date time, or rather the value of the parameter called date time, and notice that's consistent with the name of the parameter up top. And as the spec says, the means by which with Xalen that you pass a style sheet a parameter is to type at the command line Xalen-XSL and then the name of the style sheet, which is b2b.xsl, and then param in all caps, then the name of the parameter you want to define, and then the actual value. So just for kicks, I'm going to write the word today and be really lazy about it. I'm then going to hit enter. Xalen is going to apply that style sheet to the parameter because there is no XML document. There's no -in parameter specified, notice, but look what it did. On the screen, we got an XML declaration back, as we did before, and we also got the value of today. What you're going to be actually doing is not accepting date times that are fluffy like today, but like we say in the spec, you should support things like this string, which is, for instance, 1999-03-12-T18:39:09-08:00. Which is a date time string in a standard format that's described in the document. So what this exercise really is an exercise in XPath functions using the various string-oriented functions to tease apart this is the year, this is the month, this is the day, and so forth, so that you format it as we say on page 7, a nice little XML element that has the same data but is tagged semantically with metadata. No, correct. So as we say in the spec, it will always be in precisely this form with fixed width fields like this. Yep. And to be clear, this is not something that I would say XSLT is good at. This was meant to really just be a gentle introduction to the XPath functions. I would use like a Perl script or a regular expression to do this sort of thing. But it's good to acclimate to the documentation. So that in reverse order is part 2. And then part 1, but I would do them part 1, part 2, and realize that you can actually use stylus for this sort of thing as well as XMLSpy, because there is a mechanism in XMLSpy, or rather in stylus and XMLSpy, for specifying parameters to be passed. So for instance, if I just arbitrarily open an XSL file here and go to that ellipsis in the top that you saw tonight in lecture, not only do you specify what XML file you want to map this thing onto, you can also click on parameter values, and in this field, this window that appears, you see nothing defined. There's nothing I can click on because the style sheet doesn't currently have any parameters. But if I go in manually and add XSL param name equals foo, and now go up to the ellipsis in stylus, click on parameter values, notice it knows that there's a parameter called foo, and for testing purposes, if you prefer to develop in this WYSIWYG, you can then type, you know, bar is the value of this parameter. So it exists. But realize with stylus, as with, I think, XMLSpy, if you hit play without having associated the XSL file with an XML document, it will throw an error saying, oh, it's still applying it to the XML file. Wait, so if we get rid of the XML specification, so there we go. If you don't specify an XML file for stylus, and I think for XMLSpy, you'll get an error like a scenario cannot have an empty element name or an empty source XML URL. This is clearly not the case for Xalin. That's why we recommend using Xalin, because you don't have to give it some silly XML file. But, as I said last week, this is why sometimes just to make the processors happy, we'll say fine. Use this style sheet and apply it to dummy.xml just because you require as much. Well, what's dummy.xml? It's this stupid little file that has an empty element called dummy just so that it's a well-formed XML document that we're not even using. This is an implementation detail and has nothing to do with XSLT itself. That's why Xalin is a little easier, because you can do this command line trick. So, just FYI. The fun part and the really juicy part and arguably the harder part of the assignment, which you needn't bite off quite yet because I think another week of this is better preparation for everything, is this XTube aspect. So there's quite a bit of explanation in the spec as to how the UK is laid out. You'll see on like page 14 a whole description of the coordinate system that the UK uses to describe geographic locations and so forth. It is not really requisite to understand the intricacies of what the Brits do to lay out things in their geography. However, we present this information in detail so that you at least understand what the X and Y values are that we're actually giving you. So you can skim that information as background, but realize that it's not necessary to understand a lot of the content on pages 14 and 15. What is important to understand is what data you've been given. We just try to contextualize it so that you learn something a little more cartographic about the project. So what you'll do in this project is look at a file, which is also in the distribution, in the Xtube directory. And in the Xtube directory, you have an XML file called xtube.xml. And it is pretty darn big. Those of you playing along at home, I'm fast-forwarding with VI through this through the file, and we're still only at 35%. So it's the biggest XML file that we'll play with this semester, most likely, which means intelligent design choices are actually important. When it comes to writing efficient XSLT, it's important. Because one of the downsides of using XSLT, and we haven't felt this yet, is that it is not the most efficient language for processing data. And that's one, because there's a lot of string content. Two, style sheets can be very easily written poorly. 3, they have to be compiled before they're actually executed. So it's like an interpreted language in that regard. So you will find, and you will get annoyed at yourself, if when developing Project 2, you are waiting 30 or 60 seconds or 17 minutes, as we've seen sometimes, for one style sheet to apply to the document. If your processing is taking 17 minutes, you've done something foolish. 30 seconds may be more reasonable, especially in applications, perhaps, or server-side development, where it's reasonable to spend that much time processing a document if you can cache the results subsequently. But part of the project, too, at the end, is to ask you to analyze what is good about the layout of the data and what you could do to morph the data into a format yet more conducive to efficiency. So you'll appreciate some of the inherent inefficiencies of the layout. The document itself is incredibly efficient in terms of storage. There really isn't much, if any, redundant information. In Xtube.xml, there's only enough data to get the job done. But that you'll find that that requires doing a lot of back mapping in the file, for instance, because a lot of stops, for instance, are on multiple lines. A lot of lines pass through the same station. Well, you only need to capture that information once. But if you want to access it at different points in your display of that data, you start executing queries multiple times, in effect. And it's in this context where queries like slash slash will kill you, because you'll be searching over thousands of nodes unnecessarily. But it's fun what the output ultimately is. What we ask you to do with this data is the following. You'll see that in this file are things like station elements. Well, associated with a station is a unique ID, a name for the station, the coordinates in two different formats, in this OS coordinates, in Eastings and Northings, which is the whole geographic scheme I alluded to earlier, and then pixel coordinates in the GIF. We provide you with a really big GIF that is a map of similar to what we've printed out for you and made available in PDF format. This is so that you can nicely link a station to a nice little map that shows you where it actually is. We also provide you with a zero or more neighbor elements, which tells you what the station is that is next on some line to this station on what line 22. Well, what's a line? Well, at the start of the document, you have a whole bunch of information on lines. So, for instance, line with ID 1 is called the Bakerloo line. This is its color, according to the logos that Britain uses. The type of this line is tube, because you'll also see there's National Rail and Tramlink and other such services. Like, we have commuter rail, we have subway, we have buses, same idea. You'll see what kind of logo is included for you, like a PNG or a JPEG or a GIF. You can be the URL of the line's website, and a whole bunch of information. What you ultimately need to do then is to present this information to the user in a way that allows me, Joe User, to look at this page and figure out how I can get from point A to point B. And as you'll see in the spec, we leave that up to interpretation, and it's a fun design problem because you can implement this in any number of ways, some good, some bad, but you'll also, in addition to this navigable web page, using like these anchor tags or hyper-references, whatever, you will also display things graphically using SVG. And that will come in 2 weeks' time when we look at SVG, but what you will output is literally a map yet more complex than this, because it will have all of the geographic coordinates embedded. And this is a nice little Edward Tufte-style layout of the stations, whereas the true geography is sort of messy when you draw straight lines between everything. But it's great fun. But the first two parts of the project are meant to lead up to it, and this is sort of the nice icing on the cake, but certainly the more challenging part. This is not one to be left for the last night, really the last week. Whew, that was a mouthful. But it's a fun project, and the first two aspects are pretty smooth. It's fun to get your hands dirty with this stuff.
Where do you get this database?
This database, I poked around for a while on the web, and finally I found a fellow named Cal Henderson, who was nice enough to provide most of the data, and I forget, either this format or a raw format that I then converted to XML, I forget who I ended up working with at the time, just some random guy I met on Google, somehow or other, and then I think I augmented it with some of the color, I did the easy part, the color information, the websites, the GIFs. He somehow came up with all of the geography and so forth, or he found the information and did as much, I don't recall.
When you hit play in Stylus, what is actually happening? Is it modifying the XML file?
Question. So what's happening when you hit play in Stylus? No. What it is doing is it is essentially parsing the XML file and building up some internal representation. For argument's sake, let's call it a DOM. It is then doing the same for the XSL file, because that too is XML. So it gets parsed, and a DOM of sorts gets created for it. The XSLT processor then recurses on the XSLT document, starting with the style sheet tag, then going to maybe the output tag, the output element, or the param element, or ultimately one of the templates. And what happens is, once the XSL document has been parsed and is readied in memory, you begin to rather descend on the XML document, and you'll match on the root. And the XSLT processor will look, essentially, at the XSL representation and say, what template do I have that matches this root element? And it will apply that template. It will call that function, if you will. Then it will recurse according to whatever the style sheet says to do, whether it's apply templates recursively, follow the attributes nodes, whatever it tells it to do. It then comes to another node in question and says, all right, what template do I have that matches this movie element? And then it looks in its XSLT formulation and applies that as well.
You're to walk away and boot up your computer tomorrow and launch IE. I guess it's not really live. Like, if I have to build my website, there's going to be something I got to link between the XML document and XSL document.
Correct.
And so can that be done as a parameterization in the URL line, or do I actually physically have to tie them together with the
So how does it get associated? So if you're doing it client-side, you would use like this PI approach, but that is not a robust approach. Server-side, you could do it too. Usually server-side, you would execute the equivalent of like the Xalen line. Like you could have, you know, a little Perl script when you want to apply some style sheet to an XML file, you run a Perl script that, or a cron job that runs the Xalen command that we saw earlier. There is an API though. The Trax API, as we'll see next week, is actually a Java interface too. Essentially, you'll have a process method you can call, and you tell that process method what XSL file and what XML file you want to use. So you can execute a method call. Another way altogether, what we do, for instance, with the course website, which is similar in spirit, though hackish in the sense that we don't have root access to this machine, so we have to jump through hoops to actually install what software we want to make this work. But what happens with the courses website is the courses website is actually all driven by a Perl engine. And what the Perl script does when you click the lectures link is it checks the last modification dates of the XML file and the XSL file. If either is changed, it spawns a JVM, it runs a Xalen command that applies the style sheet to the XML file, it takes via standard output a copy of the resulting XHTML, dumps it into a file, and then spits out the file to you, caching it so that we don't have to do that again. So in that regard, it's all done server-side, but through a completely different mechanism. So the short answer is it depends. That's my term-long answer.
It's a great answer.
Really does, though. Other questions? No? Well, I think the best thing you can do so that you don't feel hammered by something like this in 2 weeks' time is certainly before next week bite off the B2B aspect of the project and honestly, the My Blockbuster as well, though arguably you would feel more comfortable starting My Blockbuster after next week's lecture. But it is by no means insurmountable now, especially having come to section and you know about the whole parameterization and so forth. Those two components are pretty straightforward. So, all right, let's call it a day, and I'll stick around with any questions.